All right, so. Hey guys, we're starting to record now.
Okay, I just have to ask someone to answer this question so I can write my thoughts.
Just do it in much smaller voices, please. So the thing that I had told you that I wanted to ask you about a long time ago was about learning to do woodworking with your dad. And I thought that might be a good place to start.
Sure. Well, I can just about remember when I learned. But I'm not sure how old I was. My dad was an engineer and did a lot of very practical engineering kind of work. But he was also an inventor and did a lot of electronic stuff. And about two-thirds of our basement in our house in Shaker Heights was devoted to his shop. And he had a metalworking shop with a big metalworking lathe and drill press and grinder and things like that. And he had, against the other wall, he had all of his electronic stuff. On one of the other walls, he had a box full of different kinds of pieces of metal that you could use to make stuff. And then he had all kinds of tools, sort of, then around the corner he had a big workbench, great big workbench made out of pine that he had built. It was painted battleship gray. Everything down there was battleship gray.
Why would you paint something wooden battleship gray?
I don't know. Not sure. But that seemed to be the color. It's about like the color of those benches out there, except it was wood.
Did he ever tell you about where he learned to do woodworking? I know you're not done with your story, I just was thinking.
I'll tell you that, if I know. But, so then that area was also full of metalworking stuff with all kinds of files and big vice and all that kind of stuff. And then he had a whole big room, the biggest room, was devoted to woodworking. And he had another one of those big gray battleship benches, and he had two cabinets full of tools. And I have both cabinets, they're in the shop, you've seen them. And one cabinet was full of hand woodworking tools. We didn't use power tools, hand power tools, hardly at all. So there was all kinds of really nice chisels and screwdrivers and planes. He had a whole big collection of really fancy, nice planes, really high quality. Most of his tools were Stanley tools, which was the sort of the higher end home craftsman type of tool. Some of those Stanley tools were actually very professional.
Baby, you want to come sit with us? Okay. Okay. Well, you can close that door if you want. Maybe that'll keep some noise out.
The other cabinet was full of woodworking tools that had been, you know, woodworking tools primarily are chisels, or they're either gouges or skews, or there's inverted gouges, and then there's extroverted gouges. I can't remember the words to explain them.
Concave and convex.
Something like that. Although the convex gouges are actually totally flat on one side, and then they're curved. The blade is curved in the front. And so you've got metal blades that are about 6 or 8 inches long with these very sharp, really sharp, edges, and there's a whole different tool, and then they've got a long wooden handle, say about a foot long at least, And those are used to do wood turning. And the handles, as were quite a few of his tools, were actually made by his grandfather or uncle.
Hmm.
And you can see that the handles were hand turned and stuff like that. I mean, if you look at them now, you can tell. The blades were bought and you made your own handles.
Now, Daddy.
Too complicated?
I was asking you about how you learned to do woodworking because I was interested in hearing you talk about your relationship with your dad and the way that you guys interacted and the things you did together. And you just spent 10 minutes telling me what kind of tools he had in his workshop.
Well,
which is fine, but
that's the context. That's the history. And he,
setting the stage.
He learned a lot of how to do this stuff when he went to university school in shop class.
What's university school?
That's the school down the street from where I grew up that was a private boys' school. And he went there in the early 20th century. And all schools back in those days had shop classes. And you learned metalworking and woodworking and stuff like that.
So that's where he learned?
That's where he learned, but I have a feeling that he may have learned a lot or some from his family members because we had in the shop some things that were one of his family members was a carpenter or a woodworker. One of them did metalwork. Maybe it was the same one did both. I don't remember. So these things were all passed on to him. And so when I came into the world, and my dad spent most of his free time in the basement doing things, woodworking projects or inventing or metalworking or whatever. And the rest of his time he spent in the library upstairs reading books and eventually watching television.
What was the library like?
The library was a big room, bigger than the bedroom that I have now. And it was totally paneled in one wall was all the walls that were bare were paneled in dark maple that was stained dark. And the two walls were completely these very high quality bookshelves that were built in. And he had a big stereo system in there. He used to play records all the time. And then at one end, there were these big double windows. I forget what you call them, but they're big windows. And then that's where the radiator was. And he had built a radiator cover made out of wood. And so it was about, 5 or 6 feet long. And that's where I used to spend my time, was lying on the radiator in the winter. And sometimes he would lie on it and go to sleep there. I mean, that was a favorite hangout place for the guys in my family. My mother never did anything like that.
I couldn't imagine your mother lying on a radiator.
No, but me and my dad. And I spent most of my time growing up with my dad. We had a small family. Until I was 14, my grandmother lived with us, so I spent some time with her. Her name was Olive, and she had been a concert pianist but was going blind, and she also tried to do painting, and she taught me to paint with oil paints, and we had a baby grand piano in our living room, and she played that all the time, and I just sat there in that rocker that that I've got in my bedroom, and I just listened to my grandma play Beethoven and Chopin. Brahms and Bach, all that stuff. And she was really, really good. But most of the time I spent with my dad. And, I don't remember my little teeny-weeny days, but there were things that I can tell you about later that I did with my mother. We had a definite certain kinds of relationships.
I'm listening. I'm going to use my coffee.
But my dad and I, what we did was mainly we worked in the shop.
Uh-huh.
And so, I'd come home from school when I was little, and I'd go down in the basement to work with my dad in the shop. Or when I got older, I'd go down there to work by myself sometimes. And when I had friends over to the house, they would always be guys. We would go downstairs and do stuff in the shop. And we actually didn't spend, I didn't have friends at my house very much because it was a not a user-friendly house for children.
What do you remember feeling about that when you think about feeling like you didn't want people coming over?
Well, just that there was nothing to do.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really think about it too much, but I spent most of my time when I wasn't with my dad, I spent it at my friend Charlie Hudson's house across the street. They had a dog, they had a whole big rec room in the basement, blah, blah, blah. Or I spent it next door with the Rayburn kids. They had a ping pong table and a very much more modern style interior that nobody worried if you sat on stuff.
So, tell me about a specific time that you remember.
Okay, here's the deal with the woodworking. You know, to begin with, I was too little to use dangerous tools. I'm sure I observed a lot of this. And I'm sure my dad sort of broke me in slowly by doing things like sanding and using a hand plane and using a file and things like that. And eventually, he built me my own workbench. And it was made out of a couple of big, thick pieces of beech that had come from a tree in our yard in Madison, I think.
Hmm.
And it was just a smaller version of his own, except the top wasn't painted gray. And it was a hardwood top, which fine woodworking benches are
sweet.
Always hardwood tops.
Right.
And so, and I had my own little vise, and I had my own little set of tools. Mostly I used his tools, because actually the kids' tools didn't work that great.
Right.
So
even back then.
Even back then. Eventually the time came where he let me use the woodworking lathe. And it wasn't a real big woodworking lathe, but it was in the woodworking shop. And I think one of the first projects we did where he learned, you know, you had to learn wood turning. You couldn't just like take the chisel and stick it in there. It was actually scary in some ways when it started, especially because you were dealing with uneven wood spinning around.
And because you have to push.
You have to push, and you have to know the right amount of pressure. You have to know the right angle. You can get the chisel caught between the wood spinning and the little tool rest that you sit it on. And if that happens, that can be very dangerous. It can flip the
right.
tool right out.
Yank your arm out.
Yeah. And but he taught me easier things first. I don't remember how old I was. I was pretty little. I mean, not as little as Mikey, he's 4. But I was probably 6, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there maybe. And then I remember one of the earliest projects that we did that was really sort of a big project, and it was complicated, and I learned to use all the tools and the whole process from beginning to finish, from a block of wood to getting it shaped using the bandsaw, which I wasn't allowed to use, into a round blank, attaching that to the face plate, and then you had to gouge out, that's what those things are called, gouges. You had to gouge out the center of it for the ball, and you had to round over the sides for the bowl, and you had to sand it. You could finally put some kind of finish on it if you wanted to. We usually used beeswax because it's real simple and not nasty smell. And so we did, and I have it somewhere at home. It's a little pine bowl. It might be fir wood or some kind of sort of tight grained pine. It's a very nice little bowl. It's got a little bottom on it. It's got fairly thin size. And that was one of my earlier projects, as I recall, and I could even be wrong about that. But the project that I remember the most, in some ways, was we made a Christmas present for my mother. And what he did was, he had a catalog. The only thing my dad ever bought for himself was tools. I mean, he didn't care about fancy clothes, he didn't care about eating out, he didn't care about going places or any kind of ostentatious anything, you know, jewelry or, you know, he bought himself a solid car, and for treats he bought himself tools. And he read catalogs all the time, which I also
been
known to do. And so it was some catalog. It might have been Edmund Scientific Company, or it might have been some woodworking company or something. And they had a kit for making a salt and pepper shaker. It was actually a pepper grinder and a salt shaker. And they sold you the pieces. So they sold you the wood that was already fairly close to the shape it needed to be. Mostly what you had to do was sand it and polish it. There's a little bit more to it than that. And then you had these metal parts that would go on it. And the wood was ebony. So it was like the most expensive wood in the world.
Right.
I didn't quite
realize that. Even back then?
I knew it was rare. But, you know, it was way cheaper than it is nowadays.
Right.
So he and I worked together on this thing, and we made this really cool, highly polished salt and pepper thing for my mom and gave it to her, and she loved it. I can't remember if she ever used it, but, you know, it's one of the things that I kept after she died. And unfortunately, it was sitting in some box someplace, and I think the pieces were sterling silver or silver plated or something, and they corroded, and they sort of messed up the whole thing. So I'm not sure that we still have that even, but that was one of the early woodworking projects. And, you know, some of the most difficult things to learn that he taught me about were, for instance, cutting a straight line with a hand tool. So you would have a piece of wood, a board that was already shaped and stuff, and you would have to learn, first of all, how to measure with the ruler or whatever. In other words, various kinds of tools that woodworkers used to measure wood. There was fold-up measuring sticks, which I have a bunch of.
Yeah.
There was tape measures. Even back in those days, they had cloth or metal tape measures. And then once you measured how long it was, you had to mark the angle that you wanted to cut on. So I started off, obviously, with straight angles, cross-cutting the grain, straight angles. And so the way you would get a straight angle is you use the square. So you would take, and you had to mark two places on the wood. You had to mark down the long face of the board, and then you had to mark on the top, because you needed both of those guides to make sure your line's straight. Because if you kept to those two lines, then your cut would be straight. And then there were different tools that you could use. You could use what's called a coping saw, which is like a hand jigsaw with a little thin blade and a sort of a bow-shaped back. That was really hard to cut a straight line with. They were actually made for cutting out shapes and circles and things. Because it would do what you call wander. Then there was hand saws, which we still have my dad's good hand saws, although they aren't in really great condition, but they're okay. They can be fixed up. But they're still pretty good, some of them. And all of the big hand tools had fancy wood handles. Some of them had sort of simple handles made out of maple or hickory or ash, but a lot of them had handles made with somewhat exotic woods, like rosewood, or another wood that is hardly ever used anymore, and that was, I think, even rarer then. It's called coca bullet. And part of the reason it's not used too much is because its dust is exceedingly toxic. So I had to learn to cut straight lines with the handsaw, and that was one of the big challenges. And then you had to learn things like using the hand planes. I don't know. So step by step, he brought me through this process, and I made projects with him. Then I did carpentry work, which also gives you a sense of how to deal with wood. And then I ended up where I could do all kinds of stuff on my own.
So what are the memories? What's a memories of like working on that Christmas project? You know, what are the physical memories that you have? I mean, what was it like standing there with your dad working on these things?
Well, for the most part, when Dad was teaching me stuff, he was very patient. He never raised his voice. He would correct me if I was wrong, but, you know, he didn't raise his voice, and he didn't do it all for me. So that always felt really good. I mean, he was like my buddy, and he was bringing me along and opening the world to me and teaching me. And, of course, I didn't think about it that way when I was little, but I just loved working with my dad. You know, not just woodworking, but all kinds of work. I mean, outside work, painting the house, replacing timbers under the house, plumbing, you name it. He taught me everything. Taught me how to solder, you know, everything. And so I just loved all that. And yet there were times when we did special projects that were supposed to be my projects. He had certain kinds of standards for how things needed to be done. And some of them, as you know, woodworking, especially the finishing job, can be exceedingly tedious.
Right.
And so one of the things I remember the most was in about 7th or 8th grade, we all had to do science projects at my school. And I had been getting into this catalog that he got from Edmund Scientific Company, which was almost like reading an encyclopedia of interesting things about the world. And one of the things, I was a big science wonk because I was following in the footsteps of my dad. And both my dad and my mom were actually both very interested in nature and stuff like that. So I was really science focused. And so the project that I can't remember if he suggested it or if I decided on it, but there's these things called diffraction gratings. Do you have any idea what that is? A diffraction grating is a piece of glass or plastic or something that has the kind of fine lines on it that you would see today on a DVD, but they're all parallel. And it has the property of being able to break up light into its constituent parts. So
so you can see the color range of the difference of the light spectrum.
You can see the color range, but more than that, diffraction gratings were used by astronomers to analyze the elements and the things that were out there in outer space, because if you have a certain kind of...
If you know what the light's moving through.
Right, like a certain metal might have a certain spectrum of lights.
Right.
And they're actually defined by little lines. And so so it's called a spectrometer or something like that. Mm. But it's you use this diffraction grating. So apparently Edmund Scientific Company had a little plan, you know, blueprint or something where you could make, you know, your kid can make a diffraction grating.
Oh, you can make them? I thought it was like a naturally occurring thing.
No, this, they have to be made.
Oh.
And you know, it was actually one of these high-end tech things that had been
made more accessible.
Yeah. And you just buy a piece of plastic that was a diffraction grating, and you could cut it into shape. And so we made, the plan for the science project was to make a spectrometer. Very simple one, sort of like a box camera. I don't know if you know what those are.
Yeah.
Pinhole camera, you know? And so there was one end where there was supposed to be a little door that moved up and down in a color, you know, in a light tight box. So it was like about a foot long, and we made it with four pieces of walnut boards, you know, screwed and glued together. And on the end we had a little door that opened up and down, which was made of a piece of aluminum that was sort of just put in some grooves or something like that. And then somewhere in between, there was a lens that focused the light in a certain distance from the diffraction grating. And then, it, supposedly, if you look through this little round hole in the opposite end, you could see these colors and all that. I thought it was a great idea. I was really gung-ho to make it. But my dad demanded that the woodworking be such high quality that we actually didn't end up making something that worked very well. And some of the other aspects of it weren't as good quality as the walnut box, which took forever and ever to sand and polish and put several coats of varnish on. And all this stuff, and by the end, I was really pissed off that my dad had taken over the project. And I was, it might have been okay if the thing had worked.
Right.
But then I had to take it to school, and this is a nice looking box that didn't really work. And I was supposed to be, you know, and I was like the top science student. And, you know, Don Martin brought in a nose cone from a Titan rocket made out of titanium that he had drilled holes in. His dad's company made these things, and this one was off by a thousandth of an inch. And it was like, I mean, you could stand up underneath it. And he drilled holes in it for the constellations and stuff. And we would go in
walk
there.
Walk in it.
Yeah, it didn't work that great either. But it was really impressive. I mean, obviously he hadn't done much.
Right.
I didn't think. But... so I was very disappointed. My dad sometimes would take things over.
Well,
but for the most part, my dad was my solid friend and support in many, many things.
I think that this is a good place to stop for a little bit. Okay?
Okay.
I'm gonna hit record to stop it on the same file.
Oh.